Hello, this is Mike Harrath with our Shoot the Moon podcast, our 102nd episode, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World Headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. As you know, Revenue Rocket is the world's premier growth strategy and M&A advisory for IT services companies. And we're here today with my partners, Brian Barnett and Matt Lockhart. Welcome, guys.
Hey, Mike. How's it going? Last week of summer here. So, you know, things are winding down. It's the year is, you know, in the IT services business, we like to say that if you haven't booked your year by now, boy, you're kind of a little bit behind. Summer is coming to a close.
There you go. Ryan?
Hey, yeah. Well, thank you both for being on the call today. And just to set up our topic here, we want to talk about a form of deal structure that is really interesting for both buyers and sellers today, and specifically what we're going to call a seller note or a seller promissory note. And this is a tool that's used to help mitigate some risk, as well as really kind of help alleviate some cash flow returns. So I'm going to back it up a little bit here and talk about just deal structures in general. If deals get done, there's typically a few components to that. And Mike, just walk us through just what are some typical deal terms that you might see thrown about or bandied about when you're looking at a potential letter of intent?
Yeah, so, you know, to talk about the various components, you know, oftentimes you'll hear this term enterprise value tossed around, and enterprise value actually is the best way to think about it is purchase price, right? Assuming that you're going to acquire another firm or you're selling your firm, that's kind of the total consideration or total purchase price. And then there's terms, and the terms have to do with how that purchase price is paid. And usually those components are made up of a handful of different types of currencies. It's probably the easiest way to think about it. There's cash at close, of course. There can be earn-out or gain share components where you achieve a certain threshold of performance post-close, and then you get a way of think of it as a progress payment. And you can oftentimes enhance your sale price by kind of overperforming on estimated forecasts with an earn-out or a gain share. There's certainly a promissory note that can be issued by a seller. That's kind of what we're talking about here today, or what we call seller note, where the seller is technically the bank, but it's a guaranteed payment made by the buyer. And typically sellers are secured debtors to the buyer, essentially. So they have a security interest, and we'll talk about how that gets collateralized in a minute. And then there's also equity. Of course, there's equity role that happens from time to time. Like you'll take some of your equity in your business and exchange it for equity in the buyer's business. That's pretty common for private equity firms. They'll want you to sell in, especially if you're going to stick around. And, you know, you oftentimes hear this term second bite at the apple and all that stuff. It's really about, you know, rolling some of your sweat equity, if you will, or your equity in your business into the new entity with the goal that that new entity with a proper capitalization and funding will grow to a place that you couldn't grow your business alone. And then that portion of the equity that's still owned in the new company will be worth more in the future. And then ultimately there'll be a transaction, you know, oftentimes 4 or 5 times years down the road. But, you know, it is part of a new structure or the buyer's equity or the combined buyer's and seller's equity.
That really helps define it, Mike. And when we talk about enterprise value, help me understand is there a relationship to the total enterprise value and the deal structure terms? For example, if you have something that sounds more guaranteed, what happens to the enterprise value?
Yeah, that's a good question, Ryan. So typically, if the purchase price is guaranteed, the enterprise value is lower. And it's just a risk-reward kind of, you know, equation. If you're a seller and you sell for all cash, that's likely going to have the lowest enterprise value number. Because you're, as a seller, not really taking any risk, right? You're getting a check for the full value of your business at the time of close, minus some, you know, reps and warrant holdbacks or escrows, which are common in these transactions. You'll ultimately get that money provided you haven't violated any reps or warranties that you've made or statements you've made in your purchase agreement. But generally, that's the lowest enterprise value. All guaranteed, but maybe not all paid at close is typically where a seller note comes in, where essentially you may get a portion of the transaction in cash and a portion in seller financing, where you carry a note that the buyer has with you and they pay you interest or carrying cost on that money, but you get progress payments. Sometimes those progress payments come monthly or quarterly or annually, depending on the deal. But all of that is guaranteed and it's collateralized, meaning that if for whatever reason that buyer would default on that note to you, you could call the collateral. And usually the collateral has to do with either your business assets in that situation or maybe even all the assets of the combined entity. It just depends. But, you know, we'll talk more about that in a minute. And then as you move up to more risk associated with the consideration, usually the enterprise value goes up. So like if you include an earnout, for example, enterprise value will go up. Because there is a risk that you may not hit that threshold or that earnout. Now, I'll tell you, and we've talked about this a lot in our podcast, that, you know, 86% of the time, earnouts get paid out at or above the index value, and if they're structured properly. And so you have a pretty high likelihood of getting to an earnout. So a lot of people like earnouts, particularly if they're going to stick around and be part of the transaction post-close, because they can assure and influence their ability in still running the company or driving sales for the business that they'll hit their earnout targets over the next 1, 2, or 3 years, which is typically how earnouts are structured. And then companies that have equity in them, oftentimes the enterprise values are higher for a variety of reasons, partially because you're taking into consideration not only the risk of that equity, particularly if it's not a public company that's doing the acquisition. In the case of a public company, usually stock is pretty tradable and liquid. You may have a holding period, but that equity is fairly liquid, so it looks like cash for the most part. But in a company, a private company, where you may have liquidity concerns or you may have not be able to get liquid on that equity, it certainly can tend to drive up enterprise value because you're taking some risk as well.
Yeah, so there's a definitely an equation on the enterprise value and the type of risk. And if you think about this a bit, sellers are going to want to really align their interest of what we would term selling in or selling out. And I just want to confirm either of those are a good option. But selling in, maybe, I think, opens up options for equity and really looking for fueling future growth together. And if you're selling out, I think oftentimes you sellers have less control on the impact of their business, and they are and more cash at close makes a lot more sense.
Or more guarantee. I would add, Ryan, that, you know, it certainly can be a combination of, if you're selling out, it should be more guarantee, which should be a combination of cash or seller financing. Or seller note, those are the same thing. Or when you're selling in and going to work for the business for an extended period, you can take more risk, right? Because you're at the table. You're a party to the how the company will perform post-close and can influence that outcome. So it's more likely that if you want to run up your enterprise value, maximize your sale price, that's certainly a good way to do it if you're selling it.
Right, right. But if a seller is looking to exit immediately, how does the seller note fit in? Is this something that allows them to essentially kind of they have their own risk controls and the buyer, this adds a bit of a element for the buyer that's helpful in mitigating some of the downside risks as well. are there typically provisions with a seller note? Can you say the business has to not go backwards, or it has to hit a certain revenue threshold to make sure that those payments are actually that they may or may not happen?
Yeah. So, you know, you certainly can put some conditions on a seller note, kind of call that a conditional seller note, obviously, where as a buyer, you can get some risk mitigation there. Like, you know, the seller has to be confident enough in the business, for example, to say that the business won't shrink kind of post-transaction, right? You know, and that's an ask that's pretty common in a seller note to say, hey, we just don't want the revenue going backwards from closing revenue, you know, and it's just another way to, you know, ask the seller to validate or fortify the health of the business. And if that condition is met, that's a common condition in a seller note, then the payouts will occur. Sometimes seller notes have those conditions and sometimes they don't. It just depends on the individual transaction. Best way to think about a seller note is a seller note is like the seller, the company seller is like the bank, right? If you're the buyer, you can get financing from the seller, or in theory, you can get financing from the bank. There's some advantages in getting financing from the bank and disadvantages for the buyer. Certainly, the interest rate tends to be lower if they go to the bank. And then there's advantages to the seller because certainly they will get cash at close. But what occurs in that situation is depending on the structure and size and complexity of the deal, the buyer may not be able to get all of that money and finance, right? And it may constitute the seller, the buyer and the seller getting a little more creative in how they fund this thing. So generally that's when we see a seller note or a conditional seller note is when they may not be able to either qualify for or don't choose to get for whatever reason, depending on their debt situation, the full purchase price or majority of the purchase price from the bank. So what occurs is the seller then agrees to provide a note, typically at a pretty material interest rate. 2% over prime is pretty common, but because of the risk profile, there's a higher interest rate on a seller note than on a bank note. And that's good for the seller because they get to make an interest, sort of a carrying cost on their money that's typically above other market investment opportunities. And sellers should think of it like an investment. I'm going to invest and carry a note for this buyer, and I'm going to get paid interest. They're a secure debtor to the business. So just like, you know, they have security interests in the buyer's business and collateral. And so, you know, usually to put these together properly, you need a, you know, competent M&A advisor. We certainly put these together on behalf of our clients all the time. But the components and moving parts of the seller note need to be very deal dependent, and how it's secured and collateralized is critically important if you're a seller, because you want to make sure that it aligns to your interest, particularly if you're exiting the business. Not terribly uncommon for a seller note to be collateralized by the assets that you're selling as a seller of your business. The problem is if the buyer defaults on the note 2 years from now and you're already retired and you now get your business back in some, you know, maybe not the best state or a state at which you left it, you know, is that okay with you, right? Is that considered an adequate collateralization mechanism? Now, keep in mind, they've already paid you cash and a portion of that seller note, so maybe it is okay. But you just have to think through all those components on collateralization and payment terms and interest. And that's why having an outside advisor help you to assemble it's pretty important.
Hey, Mike, that's a really good point. Do you combine a seller note with an earnout? Or do you break those up, right? And what I mean by that is say somebody wants to put conditions on a seller note, wouldn't that be better to combine a seller note, which doesn't have conditions, with an earnout period that is a gain share for both sides, so that it's not a confusion between the two? And in that scenario, the seller has a vested interest in achieving their earnout in that same period that the seller note is active.
Yeah, it's a good question, Matt. You know, every deal is different, as you know. Situationally, it can be different for a variety of reasons. But yes, in theory, you could argue that, you know, a conditional seller note protects the buyer. Usually the thresholds are set pretty low so that it's sort of a moonwalk easy for the seller to get to be able to make that condition. So the difference is like, hey, the business can't go backwards. It's a pretty low bar in a growing business, right? Unless the buyer completely screws it up, they're going to, you know, be able to get that seller note paid out. And as a matter of fact, where we propose that on behalf of buy-side clients, I can't think of one in 21 years, and we've done many, many of them, where the seller note hasn't got paid out, meaning that the business shrunk below its size when it was sold. It doesn't happen that often. But your point is really important in that if you're looking for upside as well, which would benefit the seller because you have a lot of confidence in the velocity of the business, then yes, it'd be better to, you know, combine whatever cash to close with an unconditional seller note and an earnout where there could be, you know, sort of an opportunity to participate in a gain share where if there's overperformance or upside, which as I said before, 86% of the time there generally is, then you can capture that upside or enhance purchase price as a seller.
So is there a typical balance here? So, and maybe ask differently, will companies, I certainly just can't see us representing someone on the sell side and recommending this, but do deals ever get done where they're 100% seller note?
They do. You know, it depends on, you know, usually those are unconditional type seller notes, or maybe there's a portion that's conditional. You know, it has a lot to do with the buyer's financial condition. And I think when you're thinking about that, it may also have to do with the seller's tax situation, right? So keep in mind that if you can defer some of this purchase price into a future tax period, which is what you do when you carry a note, you can improve your tax harvest. So there are some, I mean, we're not tax experts. We say that all the time. But, you know, you can actually leverage a seller note to be more tax efficient in a transaction because you're deferring into a future tax period where you may have a lower tax exposure. And so sometimes, you know, you see a seller that says, hey, I'm more interested in funding my retirement. And I want to put, and this is an example of one of those. Maybe it's a family transition and you're selling the business to your daughter or son and you want them to be able to cash flow it in a way that's meaningful. At the same time, you want to be able to fund your retirement. So you may say, I'm going to give you a 10-year seller note funded by the business and collateralized by the business. And then I can fund my retirement or 15-year, whatever the note is. And I can get paid out gradually over time and yet you can take control of the business as a family member and begin to operate it, as if you technically you own it. You just carry a pretty material note on the balance sheet, that you're paying on and you're paying interest. And so there are situations like that that come to bear where it's 100% seller note. And then usually a situational like this where it's a, you know, family member transition type deal.
I think that's a great example where maybe you have even employees that have been long-term employees that are looking to sell the firm, or the owner elect to pass it on but has time and confidence in the team that they've instilled. It seems like an interesting use of the seller note.
Yeah.
And just to understand, and by the way, you took my next question, was do seller notes help with tax considerations? And it tells absolutely there are some options there. Is a seller note typically self-financing through the success of the business? The question makes sense. If adequate cash flow are there, should this seller note be essentially paying for itself?
Well, ideally, but not always. And the reason I would say that is it depends on the term and the interest rate, right? And let me just go back one question a little bit, because partner buyouts are also where a seller note, to your point about employees, not only family, transition, but partner buyouts are very commonly done with a seller note, long tail seller note. And if it's long enough terms, and these are all related, right? If the term of the note is long enough, let's say 10 years or, 5 years or longer, depending on the profitability and growth of the business, ideally they should be self-funding. I think in most situations where we've seen partner buyouts and we've seen family member transition using seller financing, they are self-funding because they don't want to burden the business in a way that would be untenable, right? And it's in the seller's interest to do that, because then they enhance their the likelihood that they're going to get fully paid out. And this isn't an uncommon position to take, particularly with other professional services firm buyouts, like in a case of medical practices or sometimes accounting practices or law firms. Sometimes a partner buyout gets funded through these long tail. Oftentimes they're positioned as retirement plans, but when push comes to shove, they're really seller notes. And ideally, if you're a buyer, you would want them to be self-funding. Now, what I would tell you, though, is it's still debt, right? It's still on your balance sheet. And it's not atypical for a seller note to be issued in a transaction and have a buyer want to have, like a 1, 2, or 3 year conditional note, because they're trying to get it paid off, right? It's in their interest to sell or to get that debt serviced, so that they can optimize and clean up their balance sheet. So in those cases, usually they're not self-funding by the contribution margin of the business. And they may need to pay, depending on the terms, is it monthly or quarterly or annually or however it works, they may need to pay more than what the contribution margin would be to the business. It's just, again, somewhat situational. It would also depend on the size of the note, right? It might be a small note. There might be a material amount of money paid in cash that's paid up front. Maybe that cash came from the buyer's balance sheet or came from the bank. So all those things sort of play into whether or not it would be self-funding from the profitability of the acquired business.
That makes a ton of sense. And there's I just want to note here, a promissory note can be, typically there's going to be a provision for the buyer to have the ability to pay off that note early.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of them do, frankly. If the combination is going swimmingly, and believe me, you're not going to contemplate an acquisition as a buyer or really even a seller if there really isn't this 1+1=3 or very compelling reason to do the transaction, where you're going to be able to cross-sell and upsell each other's customers and you're going to be able to have all kinds of synergies. So if the base case for the acquisition is met and or exceeded, because there's just such great synergies and it's been an awful lot of cash, then most buyers on these kind of shorter term notes will pay them early just to clean up their balance sheet. And so it certainly happens quite frequently.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And then it sounds like the risk is mitigated for the seller based on the collateralized of the business. And for the buyer, it gives another measure of risk if there is some attainability metrics to make sure that perhaps there's not less customer loss or there's key employee loss. It can protect of that. But to Matt's point earlier, there's other options there around potential earnouts or potential stopgaps to hit some of those. You mentioned that the seller itself becomes the bank, not necessarily. You don't have to go to a bank to get this done. I'm assuming there's got to be some kind of legal paperwork, or is there anything that's involved in any regulated type industries when considering these?
Yeah, not really. You know, your lawyer will draft a promissory note that, you know, has all the usual legal protections in it for you. And it's pretty much that simple. It's part of the closing documents. And then you carry that note as a secured debtor of the buyer. Big risk that a seller has is that buyer either defaults on the note and then you have to call collateral, or they go out of business. And if they do, you know, you're in line with every other secured debtor in the business. So you have to weigh the health and wellness of the business. There's some reciprocal due diligence that you need to do as a seller on the buyer. I mean, certainly when we represent sellers, we recommend that they do material diligence on the buyer, make sure they have the capacity to do the deal, that they're as they present themselves, that they can have enough wherewithal to pay the note, just like you would if you were a bank, right? You go to a bank to get a loan, they do quite a bit of diligence on your business to determine that it's likely that you'll be able to pay it back. You do the same thing in a seller note situation. You do diligence on the buyer to make sure that they're bankable and that they'll be likely they will pay back their note, that they don't have any, you know, pending litigation or judgments or have defaulted on, you know, other commitments, et cetera, in the past, before you would ever agree to issue that seller note. But as far as, you know, the document, it's really a legal document, just like it is at a bank, right? When a bank lends you money, it's really just a legal transaction with a promissory note, and you sign it and they give you the money and you then begin to pay based on the agreement. Very same, you know, similar situation in a seller note context.
Well, and that brings up a point on this where I completely forgot what my question was going to be. My apologies. Strike that from the record. And it totally makes sense. There's something about risk now, guys, and we'll probably have to circle back. Matt, do you have any follow-up questions or anything else that you have in consideration for this?
Well, you know, I think that this is just sort of one example of many that sort of there needs to be a openness and creativity wins in getting things done. To Mike's point, I think it's a huge highlight that the fundamentals of a deal need to be there, right? The cultural fit, the strategic fit, and the financial fit. And this is a creative option to enable the financial fit, but all of those pieces are absolutely crucial in getting the deal done. I think we pretty well hit it and covered it.
Yeah, I think another comment I'd make about, you know, seller financing is that oftentimes it is the last, people don't think of it immediately, but it's something that may be needed to get a particular transaction done, particularly with smaller firms on both sides of the transaction, because in IT services and professional services, usually the single largest asset that owners have is the business. And of course, banks are very interested in collateralizing and mitigating their risk when they do a loan to a business in the case of a buyer. And they may just be out of collateral, right? Depending on the size of the business or the scope of the business. And so, at least from the bank's perspective, and having a little bit of creativity and flexibility as a seller, you know, may allow you to get a deal done with a seller note that the buyer couldn't get done another way, or maybe you couldn't get done as a seller. And if you see those synergies that exist, you know, you can gauge that risk. And all entrepreneurs gauge risk every day on investments they make in hiring and, sales and marketing and delivery and staff and offices and everything else. This is just another way to look at a risk paradigm that may make sense for you to get liquidity out of your business and ultimately, you know, move on to that next thing you have on your bucket list in life.
Yeah. Mike, I do have one more question here, now that my memory serves me better. If there is a contingent note, it sounds like buyers would actually need to keep a separate set of books on the success and health of the business that was acquired. Is that the case where you have to keep measuring the business separately, or at least a portion of it?
Well, it depends on the lever and the contingency, Ryan. So sometimes it's, you know, the business won't go backwards revenue-wise. Then, yes, they need to at least keep a separate set of books to account for that revenue during that contingent period or note period. But it sometimes is contingent upon other things, like that the seller doesn't compete for a period of a certain length of time, or maybe it's a headcount contingency where you can't have headcount lower than XYZ, which we've seen a few very rare situations, but we've seen them. Or it may be contingent upon a major customer being retained for a period of time that maybe the buyer has concern about. And in those situations, it wouldn't require them to have a different set of books. It would only that they could track whatever that contingency might be, either headcount or major customer retention or non-compete or whatever. So I think the short answer on that is it depends on what the contingency is. If it's revenue related, certainly it would be important, or profit related, or some, you know, maybe it's gross margin related. Anything to do with the financials, it would require another set of books. But if it had a different lever, it might not.
Thank you. That clears that up. I appreciate it. Well, that's all the questions I've got today. And Mike, I'll turn it back to you for any closing thoughts and where you might take this thing.
Thanks, Ryan and Matt. Hopefully our audience found this to be an interesting topic today. As you guys know, we'll now tie a ribbon on it for this week at Revenue Rocket. We'll be back next week for our 103rd podcast. And we encourage all of you to come visit us at RevenueRocket.com, or if you have a question about this podcast or anything else as it relates to your IT services business, feel free to drop us a note at info@RevenueRocket.com. Thanks, and make it a great week.